Welcome to Good Evening. I'm your host, Brandon Shea Mutella, and joining me, as always, is my ever-constant co-hosts, Chris Haig and Tom Caldwell. Chris, I've got a great big glass of brandy to give you.
Just don't make me drink it.
Yes, you're gonna drink it as fast as you possibly can, aren't you? Tom, I got the best idea. Now that that corner lot is open, you and I should totally invest in that area, in that land deal that they filled that hole in finally after 10 years. It's a really good idea.
I've got a bit of a suspicion about this.
Really? What could be suspicious about this? You invest the money, and I'll push you off the... nothing, never mind.
But you'll run the company.
Yes, that's right, yes.
And should we go out early in the morning on a windy day and drive out there and have a look around? Would that be a good idea?
Yeah, see, there's nothing really dangerous in Regina other than, like, you know, like the potholes.
Yeah. I hit a pothole, the other night. I thought I lost a wheel. Anyway, carry on, sir.
Excellent. In case you guys can't figure out what we're talking about tonight, we're talking about suspicion. And this is an interesting little film because it's the first time that we see Cary Grant.
Mm. Wow. Good for him.
Yes, and he's around for a couple of Hitchcock films. So
a few, boy, just some minor little ones.
I've seen North by Northwest so many darn times. Boy, does Cary Grant look young in this movie.
Yeah.
He does.
Yeah. Anywho. Excellent. Chris, yeah. Before we get started, did you want to give us a quick little summary of the film?
I absolutely will. So for those of you who aren't aware, I am basically going to talk about a lot of the film. But charming scoundrel Johnny Asghar, played by Cary Grant, woos wealthy but plain Lina McLaidlaw, Joan Fontaine, who runs away with him despite the warnings of her disapproving father, Cedric Hardwick. After their marriage, Johnny's risky financial ventures cause Lina to suspect he's becoming involved in unscrupulous dealings. When his dear friend and business partner Beaky, played by Nigel Bruce, dies under suspicious circumstances on a business trip, she fears her husband might kill her for her inheritance. Dun dun dun.
Dun dun dun.
Dun dun dun.
Okay. I mean, here's my notes on the history of the making of the trivia of Suspicion. Suspicion is a 1941 romantic psychological thriller film directed by Alfred Hitchcock and starring Cary Grant and Joan Fontaine as a married couple. It also features Sir Cedric Hardwick, Nigel Bruce, Dame May Whitty, Isabel Jeans, Heather Angel, and Leo G. Carroll. Suspicion is based on Francis Ailes' novel, Before the Fact, from 1932. And I really hope I said his name right. I-L-E-S. Ailes? For her role as Lena, Joan Fontaine won the Academy Award for Best Actress in 1941. This is the only Oscar-winning performance in a Hitchcock film. Wikipedia lists the release date as November 14th, 1941, and has a running time of 99 minutes. Now, a peek behind the curtain, we're recording this on November 17th. So, this film was released, 88 years and 3 days ago.
Wow.
Is that 88 or is it 70? 78. 78 years ago. Yeah, 78 and 3 days ago. Bonkers. Hitchcock was quoted as saying that he was forced to alter the ending of the movie. He wanted an ending similar to the climax of the novel, but the studio was more concerned with Cary Grant's heroic image, and they insisted that it be changed. However, in his biography of Hitchcock, which was called The Dark Side of Genius, and again in The Art of Alfred Hitchcock, 50 Years of Motion Pictures by Donald Spado, he disputes Hitchcock's claim to have been overruled on the film's ending. Spado claims that the first RKO treatment and memos between Hitchcock and the studio show that Hitchcock emphatically desired to make a film about a woman's fantasy life. So Hitchcock's been on record saying that he was forced to change the ending, but paperwork says that he was right from the beginning wanting to change it. So who knows? Memory's a fickle thing. Now, this film was nominated for the 1942 Academy Award for Best Picture, also for Best Original Score, And then, as I said, Joan Fontaine won for Best Actress. Now, she also won the New York Film's Critics Circle Award for Best Actress. And the film later won the 1948 Kinema Junpo Award for Best Foreign Language Film. I've always wondered about that, how some films can be, like, nominated in categories, like, years after the fact. But that's something I don't understand about. Maybe it's, like, when it was released in their country or something like that. Now, Cary Grant, who was born, I did not know this. His real name is Archibald Alec Leach. Did you guys know this?
No.
I think yeah. so, yeah.
Now we do.
I did not know that. So Cary Grant is a stage name, so bonkers. He was born January 18th, 1904. My birthday is January 17th. And he died November 29th, 1986. He played Johnny Asgarth, and he was an English-born American actor known as one of the classic Hollywood's definitive leading men. He was known for his transatlantic accent, debonair demeanor, lighthearted approach to acting, and sense of comic timing. During the 40s and 50s, Grant developed a close working relationship with director Alfred Hitchcock, who cast the popular actor in several of his critically acclaimed films, including Suspicion, Notorious, To Catch a Thief, and North by Northwest. The suspense dramas Suspicion and Notorious both involved Grant showing a darker, more ambiguous nature in his characters. Toward the end of his film career, Grant was praised by critics as a romantic leading man, and he received 5 nominations for the Golden Globe Award for Best Actor, including the films Indiscreet with Ingrid Bergman, That Touch of Mink with Doris Day, and Charade with Audrey Hepburn. Charade is fantastic, and if you guys are Hitchcock fans, you'll love Charade. Charade is really good. Walter Matthau is wonderful in that film. He's remembered by critics for his unusually broad appeal as a handsome, suave actor who did not take himself too seriously and was able to play with his own dignity in comedies without sacrificing it entirely. So we've mentioned the 4 films that he's in, but he was also in the Lux Radio Theater adaptation of I Confess, the Academy Award Theater radio adaptation of Suspicion, and the Screen Directors Playhouse rendition of Shadow of a Doubt. Joan Fontaine played Lena McLaidlaw Asgarth, and we spoke about her when we covered Rebecca, but she was also in the Lux Radio version of Suspicion, which is not the same one that Cary Grant was in. This is her second and last Hitchcock appearance, although she will appear in the Alfred Hitchcock Hour episode, The Paragon. Dame May Whitty played Mrs. Martha McLaidlaw, and we spoke about her when we covered The Lady Vanishes, and this will be her final Hitchcock appearance. Sir Cedric Webster Hardwicke was born the 19th of February, 1893, and died the 6th of August, 1964. He was an English stage and film actor whose career spanned nearly 50 years. His theater work included notable performances in productions of the plays Shakespeare and Shaw, and his film work included leading roles in a number of adapted literary classics. Hardwicke's first appearance in a British film was in 1931, and from the late 30s he was in great demand in Hollywood. He played David Livingston opposite Spencer Tracy's Henry Morton Stanley in Stanley and Livingston, and in 1939 he also played the evil Jean Frollo in The Hunchback of Notre Dame. The same year, in 1940, he played Mr. Jones in a screen version of Joseph Conrad's novel Victory, and he starred as the unfortunate Ludwig von Frankenstein in The Ghost of Frankenstein, alongside Lon Chaney Jr. and Bela Lugosi. This is his first of 2 Hitchcock film appearances, and we will see him again when we cover Rope, and he will also appear in Alfred Hitchcock Presents episodes Wet Saturday and A Man Greatly Beloved. And interesting, he will also play Robert Bonting in the 1944 radio version of The Lodger. And the last actor that we shall cover is William Nigel Bruce. He was born on the 4th of February, 1895 and died October 8th, 1953. He was a British character actor on stage and screen. He was best known for his portrayal of Dr. Watson in a series of films and in the radio series The New Adventures of Sherlock Holmes, starring Basil Rathbone as Sherlock Holmes. Bruce is also remembered for his roles in Hitchcock films Rebecca and Suspicion. Now, Bruce's career signature role was that of Dr. Watson, and he starred as Watson in 14 films of the series and over 200 radio programs of The New Adventures of Sherlock Holmes. And although Watson often appears to be the older of the two main characters, Bruce was 3 years younger than Rathbone. Though for most viewers, Nigel Bruce has formed their vision of Dr. Watson, Holmes purists have long objected that the Watson of the books was intelligent and capable, although not an outstanding detective, and that Bruce's portrayal made Watson intellectually dimmer and more bumbling than the literary figure. So this is his second of two Hitchcock appearances. Like, as I said, we saw him in Rebecca, and he will be in the Lux Radio Theater version of Suspicion. Now, a reoccurring motif in this, we see the stairs and Hitchcock's cameo. He's posting a letter at the village post office. So there we go. Those are our history and trivia on the film. Shall we jump into...
Did you recognize the puppy?
That's one of his Scottish Terriers, right?
There's a Salem Terrier in the film, and apparently it is one of Hitchcock's own Salem Terriers.
Awesome.
And pardon me the privilege here for a moment to refer us all back to episode 20 of Good Evening Podcast, when we did talk about the Salem Terriers from the Hitchcock film with Anthony Hopkins, and we talked all about the dogs, and we talked to the owners of the dogs who appeared in that film. Mm-hmm. So there's a little flashback. Now, I will get off of my self-promoting horse, and we'll get back to our episode.
Oh, geez, Tom, just taking over. What do you think? You're one of the hosts of the show or something? Awesome. Excellent. Yeah, let's jump into our discussion of this film. I'm going to save my comments for last this time because I went first because I was chomping at the bit when we talked about Mr. and Mrs. Smith. So I'm going to hold back for a second. Chris, let's start with you.
I enjoyed this. I think it's one of the... It's weird because it's one of the darker films without much graphic content or... murder or anything like that. So I thought it was quite interesting in that it is dark, and the actual source material is much darker than the film, even. So it's a very interesting story. I thought the performances were fantastic. Any chance for Cary Grant is amazing, and Joan Fontaine is incredible because it's almost a bit, it's a little bit Betty Davis in Now Voyager. It's a little bit, I'm trying to think who, what they, basically it's trying to evoke this kind of like plain spinster who, it actually reminds me a little bit of Rebecca in the novel Rebecca, in the sense of it's a plain heroine who kind of evolves and transforms through marriage and through that sort of thing. But no, I just thought it was very well shot. It was very suspenseful. Mm-hmm. It was one of the most taut films I think he's ever done, because you're never really sure whether or not Cary Grant is actually trying to kill Joan Fontaine, whether because he is basically portrayed as this kind of scoundrel, this kind of moral reprobate, that sort of thing. But then he's Cary Grant. He's the most charming man on earth. So you're kind of like, oh, do you lean into that? Do you think, oh, well, he's been really charming because, you know, there's that quote which is that psychopaths don't look like psychopaths, they look like really charming people because they need people to do what they say. So I thought it was interesting. It was more interesting than I thought it was going to be, and there were a lot of key elements I really enjoyed about the film. So I really enjoy the finale, which is quite unsettling. I quite like the way it was shot. So for example, in the house there's these gorgeous shots where Joan Fontaine's moving around the house, and it's like some kind of, and it's just something I noticed, it's like a visual cue, was that there's like this stained glass window that's designed to, it's lines coming down, but when she's running across it and the light's coming through, it looks like she's trapped in the middle of a spider web. Like she's trapped and helpless and kind of at the court, at the centre of it, about to be devoured, which I thought was just a really cool, interesting visual clue. I don't know if it was deliberate, I don't know if it was completely accidental when they bought or built the house, but I thought it was really interesting because she would have these conversations, like she's talking to the maid or she's talking to Cary Grant, and she's there framed as though in the centre of like a fly, a helpless fly in a spider web. Mm-hmm. So I just thought that was really cool. But yeah, I enjoyed this.
Mm-hmm. Tom?
Wasn't the Cary Grant character wonderfully horrible and deceivous? Like he was so crooked. And you made a very apt reference to the psychopath personality, mm-hmm. where he just charms everybody. But he was, I'll give you a dollar Tuesday for a burger today. Like, he was, everything was a con, and the money came from here, but it actually came from there. And that whole story about Lena inheriting those beautiful armchairs that were worth 100, mm-hmm. what is it, 100 pounds each or 100 quid each or whatever the money was, and him selling them behind her back, and that whole interrogation with his friend Binky trying to make him, you know, explain it to his wife. And the whole thing was very, very clever. Mm-hmm. And, like, he played a villain that, again, like, we kind of have to avoid to try and give away the end, not to give away the ending, but her suspicion of him near the end of the film is so perfectly justified and so perfectly set up that she is convinced that her life is in danger because of his potential mm-hmm. nefarious plot to collect her life insurance money if she were to die.
Right.
And I had a moment of clarity when I realized that this was the glass of milk coming up the stairs. This is that famous scene that in all our work on the other Hitchcock podcasts and the other films we've covered, you know, these little montages of dangerous moments in Hitchcock films that you see on the internet always show that glass of milk coming up the stairs. And now I get it, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. right? Like she was justifiably petrified that she might have to drink that milk and that might have been the end of her. And I personally, you know, don't drink milk, and I find that horrible. Mm-hmm. Horrible thought in its own right, but for different reasons. Mm-hmm. It's a stomach turner. But very, very good film, like very interesting characters. And again, like his character is so strong and such a bad guy in a greasy way. Mm-hmm. Like this whole concept that he married her for her money, but there was never, like, for her potential future inheritance, but there was never any guarantee that that would happen.
Yeah.
So he married her on a very weak premise.
Yeah. Yeah. This was an interesting film. Like I had a tough time watching this movie. Like I was on edge the whole time. I was extremely agitated because I did not like Cary Grant's character in this at all. And that doesn't mean I didn't like the movie. I love the movie. I think the movie is really good, but it was very uncomfortable to watch this movie, you know, and you are very right in that I believe that her thought process and the breadcrumbs that she followed to come to that conclusion at the end that he's going to be killing her for her life insurance money is justifiable based on the breadcrumbs he's left. Because, you know, what's hard about this is, again, I've seen North by Northwest so many times, and I know Cary Grant from so many other movies. To see him as a bad guy in this is very strange. And he is a bad guy in this movie because he is lying and cheating and stealing this whole movie from people, you know, and he stole from his boss. He lied to his wife. And I mean, like, you know, as a person who comes from a family that suffers from addiction, you know, I'm always very wary of addiction. You know, like my grandparents were alcoholics, my aunt was alcoholics, I've had drug addiction in my family. And, you know, I've, in my youth, early on, like, I was addicted to gambling at a very young age, right? Like, when I first became legal age in Saskatchewan that I could gamble, I was gambling right away. And I'm very fortunate that I realized it early enough and I didn't get myself into too much trouble. But so for me, like, I stay away from the casino because every time I go, you know, which is like once every couple of years, I get that gambling fever. Right. So I know that I have to stay away from it. So here's a person who's gambling. So like that's why it agitated me so much, is because, like, I know what it's like to be addicted to gambling as somebody who's barely gambled and didn't make it into that. You know what I'm saying? So, but the fact that he's lying and stealing from his wife and stealing from his job and losing his job and lying to his wife about where he is, like, it was very, very unsettling for me. And, you know, it's a great movie, but, oh, this was a hard watch for me. So, and I mean, like, it's not entirely, like, I don't know if this is going to sound right when I say this, but, you know, Joan Fontaine's character is, like, not quite innocent in this either, because when she married him, she's just like, well, this guy's clearly rich. Like, look at how he's blowing money, right? So, like, she's marrying into this guy thinking he's going to take care of her too, right? And when he's just like, I don't have any money, I'm counting on you, she's like, I don't have any money, I'm counting on you. Like, they're both in the same boat right off at the bat, right? So, I mean, like, she makes the grown-up decision to get work, and she's trying to convince him to get work. But, I mean, like, she played into that stereotype as well of thinking that he was this rich person and he had a lot of money, you know? So, I don't know, like, but with the way the movie went, I totally buy. And I actually found the ending to be quite unsatisfying. So, but again, like, I love this movie, but I found it unsatisfying because it's like, okay, so we find out that he's not going to kill her. He's got an alibi. Everything makes sense. And yes, everything was seen from her perspective because she didn't have all the facts. But at the end, it's like, so they're living happily ever after now? They're going to go and be a happy family?
Yeah. I think it's an unsatisfying ending because it deviates so much from the book. And I'm going to spoil the ending of the book for anyone who's not read it. But basically, the bit towards the end where he's carrying up this glass of milk and all that sort of thing, in the book, she knows that he's poisoned it.
Mm-hmm.
And she still eagerly drinks it down because she is so in love with him at this stage, and it's such an obsession, and it's such a, well, ironically enough, it's an addiction. She's addicted to being with him in his kind of sphere of influence and that sort of thing, that she drinks it, and she's like, I don't care that he's killing me, I don't care this is going to kill me, and she even hopes that he gets away with it. You know, which is a fundamentally effed up way of viewing this, and of the relationship and that sort of thing. And so, you know, there is discussion, like you mentioned during your trivia section, Brandon, that, oh, well, they wanted to change the ending and Hitchcock wanted to change it, but then apparently Hitchcock wanted to make this about a woman's fantasy life and that sort of thing, which is fine, all that sort of thing, but it does rob the end of the movie of its power, because you get this climax where, and it is quite a cool shot of them driving and the door flies open and it's just the cliff beneath, and it looks like Cary Grant's going to try and push her, and she's scrambling away, and it turns out he's trying to pull her back in the car, and it's this whole thing. But then that is the last 2 minutes of the film, followed very shortly by them pulling up and him saying, oh, I wasn't going to kill you, I was going to take you to your mother, and then I was going to kill myself, and that's why I was looking into poisons and all that kind of stuff. And it's just, it just wraps it up to, it's too neatly, and because it doesn't feel earned. Because you're right in saying he is not a likeable character. You know, we'll be covering Shadow of a Doubt soon, and you've got that same kind of charismatic person in there, except in Shadow of a Doubt, that character doesn't suddenly have a last-minute redemption where it turns out, oh, he was secretly good the whole time. You know, it's very hard to find him likeable, because you do have this guy who is preying on someone who is shy and timid and that sort of thing, and then does engage in this behaviour, and it is toned down a lot from the book. In the book, he's much more of a real heel of a person, but even in the film, he's not great. He's not a nice guy.
No,
you know, he still sells her property without permission to pay off his gambling debts.
Yeah.
You know, he's just generally this kind of gaslighting sort of behaviour and all that sort of thing. So, no, he isn't very likeable. And so the ending where they sort of go, oh, darling, it's going to be all right, so unsatisfying, because you're just left with this feeling of, like, is that it? Is that he's not going to try and, like, become a better person, or he's not going to go, well, do you know what, I've got a lot of stuff I need to deal with, we'll work on this, or there's that sort of thing. It's just someone like, we'll just patch it over. You know, we'll put a band-aid on a gunshot sort of thing. So, I think that's what, at least what I have the issue with the ending, in that it just feels rushed and it feels unearned.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's... I almost would have preferred had he been trying to kill her the whole time.
Yeah.
like I not because I wanted him to kill her or anything, and I don't want her to be dead in the end, but it's like, even some type of resolution where this guy goes to jail or something like that
yeah.
would be like a better ending for me. Because again, he's so unlikable and he's not a good person this whole movie. And yeah, I don't know. But this is also cinema of 1941 where they wrap things up and everything's okay with an apology and everybody's happily ever after that.
Yeah. So. I would have loved, and I'll be honest, you know, when you create like a version in your own head, my version of it is, she does the milk and that sort of thing. She realizes he's trying to poison her, and it's that moment where she stops being so passive and becomes like an active, like that's the sort of the straw that breaks the camel's back. And so they're driving along, that sort of thing, and he does actually try and kill her in the car, but then somehow it all goes wrong. And they're on the cliff and it's like a prolonged chase and that sort of thing. And she, I don't know if she pushes him, but she kind of just, she does push him. She pushes him to his death. Mm-hmm. And it'd be such a dark ending, and it would be murder, and it would be that sort of thing. But I would much rather see that. I'd much rather see a cathartic ending than this weird, not, you know, because it's not that he's an outright villain. It's not that he's a hero and we've justified it. He's very grey, but not in a fun way.
Do you see him in the future story that happens after the movie ends, when they continue their married life? Does he reform his financial shenanigans?
No.
Does he become a proper husband with a solid job and no more con man scams?
No. Because all we know, like 5 minutes after the film ends, he only said, I was planning on killing myself. We don't know if that's true.
Well, yeah. We don't know that that's true at all. Like, why was he... That's the thing. He's driving down this road. Why is he driving down this road on the edge of a cliff like a maniac? And when he's, like... In my opinion, he's, like, gaslighting her the whole time, right? And he's like, I was trying to save your life. Why are you driving like a frickin' lunatic down this road that you need to be saving my life? I don't know.
Yeah.
Right?
We already know that he had plotted to take Binky out there and push him off, right?
Well, that's what the evidence looked like, but according to the resolution of this film, no, he didn't. But, I mean, in my headcanon, I don't know, like, at the end of this movie, I think this guy is still lying to her, he still intends to kill her, and in Suspicion 2 starts off with, they're walking towards their car, like, literally after this, we get a different ending where he just pushes her off the cliff. I don't know, like, and then he's on the run from the law for Suspicion 2. Like, that's what I see as the sequel to this movie, right? Like, I don't know. So,
there's a lot of talk about how they're both children in this movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, he is a financial man-child. He has no... he's not a good husband, he's not a good provider, he's not a financially stable person. He just always working the con, working the scam, talking his way through everything. And then he refers to her as monkey face.
Yeah.
Like, okay, a couple of times that's cute, that's your little lovey-dovey nickname for your wife, but pretty much 9 out of 10 times he's calling her monkey face. And there's that weird scene where she's upset and the Johnny and Binky are tickling her and quacking like ducks to try and make her laugh. And I'm like, what adult woman would tolerate that?
Yeah.
And what are they, like, where did that come from? That they're, it's like they've got a toddler on a chair in a photo studio and they're trying to make her smile for the camera. Like, it's just goofy. And so there's no, they don't, there's no respect paid to each, either character as being a mature adult, like an actual, respectful, you know, solid member of a marriage with, you know, responsibilities or maturity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, how ironic then is it, just, you know, it's great to think of the children and the child and everything, that he could have, it's a glass of milk.
Right. Yeah.
I just think it just like it's a symbol because, like, in the book, it's not. I think it is a cocktail. I think it is just like a drink. She just kind of pegs it down. But yeah, but, no.
And at the beginning, she's reading a book about child psychology, right? When she's on the train and he meets up with her.
Yeah. So I think
I don't know, and I think that's why she realized it. Like, that's my interpretation of why she realized it right away. She's like, "Oh, you're a child." You know, I don't know, but yeah, you're right, Tom. Like, that scene with the quacking like a duck and trying to make her laugh, I'm like, this is uncomfortable. Like, this is not something that's good. So
mm-hmm. No,
like, I thought the introduction of the mystery author and her husband, the coroner, was very interesting. Mm-hmm. Like, that really added a lot to it, and that really helped explain where he was getting his ideas from. And that was very clever the way they layered in that relationship between Lena and the author and her mystery novels.
Right.
And that was almost like a little bit of Hitchcock appearing as the mystery writer, mm-hmm. you know, sort of a cameo in a roundabout way. But I quite enjoyed that. And I got a kick out of, was it a bit of like a flash forward when the author says to her husband, "You couldn't hurt a fly." That was a little bit of a psycho flash forward that I appreciated.
I really want to see the movie that's like a spin-off, but not really, of the mystery writer and the coroner, like, solving a serial killer. I think that's, I would pay to see that.
That could be a movie series, like a TV series itself.
Yeah. Right?
Well, that could be Suspicion 2.
It's a bit like Castle. Yeah.
Suspicion 2, after he pushes her off, right? After he pushes her off the cliff, then it's the writer and her husband figuring out and proving.
Cause they then that's how you get actual kind of catharsis for the whole thing. Oh. Yeah, I'm down for it. Suspicion 2, Electric Boogaloo.
I love it. Excellent. Electric Milk Boogaloo.
I'm genuinely trying to think, is there a bet, is there like electric, yeah. Okay, I'll think of it.
Anyways, I like the movie. It was really good.
Mm.
It was just really uncomfortable to watch, you know, so.
Yeah.
Like,
But that's an emotion.
Yes.
That's your experience.
Yeah.
It took you there. Like, it gave you that sensation, mm-hmm. that delivered that to you, right, as a viewer.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, like, bravo, like, he did it. Like, I don't have a lot of movies affect me like this.
Mm.
You know, like I get jump scares from movies and stuff, but I don't generally get frightened and fearful of a lot of movies. You know, like the only movie that really truly affected me deeply was The Blair Witch Project, the first time I saw that. You know, and then, I can't even think of many other movies that affected me in a way. Like, the only other one is David Fincher's Zodiac, right? And, like, that one bothered me because it was based on a true story and the guy never got caught. So, like, that there's no resolution. And because this has such a poor resolution, it feels like there's no resolution to this film.
Yeah.
And I don't like having her still be in this situation at the end of this film. Because, like we just said, this guy's not going to change. So what's going to happen next? What's going to be the next event that happens for this couple? Because it's not going to be good. I don't care what 1941 Hollywood films did. This woman is not in a good situation at the end of this movie.
No. Yeah, I mean, for me, I completely agree. The only thing I can compare it to, and it's the only time that I've watched an episode of a TV show and have been affected by the lack of closure at the end, and it's not in the right format. So basically, there's a British show that was on years ago called Wire in the Blood.
Okay.
And Wire in the Blood is basically a serial killer show. It's about a forensic psychologist who teams up with the police to solve serial killer murders and all that sort of thing. And there's an episode where it's a guy who's going around seducing women and killing them and giving the trophies to his abused wife. Mm. And and it ends up working out that he leaves his wife and kills a woman in a Oh no, he almost kills a woman in the bathroom, but somehow she escapes and that sort of thing. But then he just takes a flight and he's never caught. And for some reason, that scares me more than the darkest stories where they get caught. And it is the lack of resolution. It's the fact that you also never see him. His face is never shown. His name is never uttered. He's just called the killer. So for that one episode, they kind of break the format a bit so that you never find out who it is. You never get a resolution, that sort of thing. And so that's why when you mentioned Zodiac, which I haven't seen. I love David Fincher, but I haven't seen it.
Oh, dear. It's his best movie. It's so good.
Oh, it's on the list. Believe me, it's on the list. But it reminded me so much of that. That kind of, we don't get resolution, we don't get the catharsis, and we don't even get, you know, it doesn't have to be a happy ending, but you still need that moment where you come out the other side and you've achieved something. Mm-hmm. Even in horror movies, you can come out of, like, Psycho, and it's not a happy ending because people are dead and it's depressing and it's a real horror, but you still have the catharsis because you know what happened.
But he's caught, right? Like,
yeah, exactly.
He's caught at the end of it, at the end of Psycho.
Yeah.
So
yeah, but it's like it's answered its questions, you know. Who lives in the house? Who killed Marion? Who did this? Who did that? They're all answered, and like you said, they're caught and all that sort of thing. But with this,
they answer everything, right? They give him an alibi for everything, right? But, like, but
it's basically a great tense movie. Really didn't like the ending.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah.
Tom, you got anything else you want to add to our discussion on Suspicion?
I'm still very suspicious of you, Brandon.
Good. You should be.
Yeah.
I've taken a life insurance policy on you. And you too, Chris.
What?
You can't reach me.
We actually don't know where you live, Chris.
You'll never know. Sorry, oh no, hell, you do. I'm thrilled because you've sent me stuff, Tom. that was my old address. Ha, no you don't.
We're mailing you milk as we speak.
just a post-it that says drink.
Do you know how expensive it is to ship a horse's head overseas? Anyway, no, I'm quite happy with our discussion, and I think... again, like, I would just clarify that I think Grant's character is amazingly good at being bad, right? Like, he's very, very just, like, horrible financial planning guy, horrible husband, and very, very, very strong character in that regard.
Mm-hmm. Chris, why don't you give your rating on the film? What do you give this?
I will go with the classic 4 car doors that just won't stay shut.
Tom?
4 cold glasses of milk with an eerie light glowing from inside.
Excellent, right on. And I'm going to give it 4 glasses of brandy so that I need to down as quickly as possible. How the hell is that brandy killing that guy? How does drinking brandy kill you, maybe?
He drinks a lot of it, and then it's alcohol poisoning.
Is that the deal?
Yeah, alcohol. Yeah,
I guess I got it that it was like a heart attack or something that he was having. I read online that it's like an allergy to brandy, and I'm like, you could be allergic to brandy. So
I just thought it'd be alcohol poisoning because if you drink enough in a short space of time, basically your blood toxicity just kills you. Mm. You are just stone dead.
Wow. Yes,
the code of motion pictures was saying, don't drink brandy because you'll die. So, excellent, right on. Awesome. Okay, so we are here. It's 2020. It's a brand new year. It's a brand new decade. And we are looking forward to bringing wonderful Hitchcock podcasts to you all year long. Here we are starting the year off with Suspicion. Next month, we have got Saboteur. So I'm looking forward to that, getting to some more wonderful landmarks across the United States. But I think we got a few interesting episodes for you this year. So 2020 is going to be a good year for Good Evening. I'm looking forward to it. And I hope you guys all had a wonderful Christmas, all the listeners. And
are you saying you've got good 2020 vision?
I've got good 2020 vision. Oh, dear Lord.
The jokes on the internet are going to be horrible for the entire month of January and February.
Listen, I had a job interview in 2015, and they said, where do you see yourself in 5 years? And I honestly couldn't resist from saying, are you asking for my 2020 vision?
And did you
And I got the job.
Oh, well done.
Bam.
Brilliant.
I mean, admittedly, I was already working there as a temp, so it would have been weird if they hadn't hired me. But I made three people who I'd never met before laugh. And I was like,
well done, sir.
So I'm glad to have made it to 2020 just to fulfill that joke.
That joke was...
You'll have to remind them if you see them.
That joke was funnier than the entirety of Mr. and Mrs. Smith.
I mean, that's a very low bar, though, isn't it?
Yes, so...
That's like, that time I slipped a herniated disc, is it still funnier than Mr. and Mrs. Smith? Yes.
Yes, yes, it was. Yes. Excellent. Well, yeah. That's all we've got for you today. But before we go, we'd like to thank the wonderful guys over on the Fandom Podcast Network for hosting our show. We have our independent feed as well. If you could give us a rating and a review, you know, we'd love that. Tweet our tweets, share our posts on Facebook, retweet our posts, get the knowledge out there, get the show out there so people can find us. We'd love to have some more listeners. What a wonderful way to break in the new year than a whole bunch of retweets by our listeners. Please, please, please. We'd like to thank Annie and Catherine over on Good Evening, an Alfred Hitchcock Presents podcast. They're covering all the Alfred Hitchcock Presents episodes one at a time. And together with their show and ours, you get a near comprehensive look at the Grandmaster's work. Thank you so much to Jason Cullimore, who created our wonderful theme music. Tom, where can people find you when you're not selling your wife's chairs?
Well, Instagram, I am known as the Tom Caldwell, accept no imitations. Tom Caldwell 3000 on Twitter. And of course, check us out on our Twitter entity for our show and our Facebook homepage. We always enjoy having our fans and our listeners interact and comment.
You bet. Chris, where can people find you when you're not trying to make me laugh by quacking like a duck?
I mean, I do laugh like a duck, so that's fair. You can find me on Twitter at @hi_boy. Apart from Good Evening, I also co-host North by Nerdwest, which is me and my best mate Emma Platt, and we just talk about all kind of nerdy stuff and catch up, and it's just really fun. If you are listening to this in January, hopefully we have some new episodes out by then. If not, there will be some coming in 2020. I also appear on a bunch of different podcasts, such as Eccentric Earth, which is Amy Walker's history podcast, and Matt Latham's Pick a Disc podcast, which is where you get to talk about one of your favourite albums. So make sure you check those out. Say hi on Twitter. You know, all the good stuff.
Excellent, right on. And as for me, where can you find me when I'm not drinking milk? You can find me on Twitter at Brandon Metella, and I am over on Trek FM with a show called The Line, which is our Star Trek Picard podcast, and this is coming out in early January, so Star Trek Picard will just be dropping its first episode on the 23rd, so I'm very much looking forward to that, just a couple of weeks away from the new show. You can also find me over on the United Federation of Podcast Network with my friend Zach. We have a show called Franchise Fatigue, which is all about movies, remakes, and sequels, and we go through them one at a time. Well, that's it for now. Until next time, good evening.
Good evening.
Good evening. We'll be right back.